As sports history fans, we often reminisce about the legends. Willis Reed limping on to the NBA Finals court, Curt Schilling's bloody sock, Kerry Strug's courageous dismount, and so many more. These moments often define sports history. But what about the countless injuries that did not become legends, or careers that were derailed due to inadequate care? That's where this episode's sponsor comes in. Introducing to you, ILP Sports Consultants, your trusted sports injury partner, available 24/7. Brian Maielli at ILP Sports Consultants has over 20 years of experience in the orthopedic and sports medicine industry, and he has worked with athletes across the gamut, from youth to amateurs, professionals, in almost every sport played in the United States of America, accommodating athletes at every stage of their career. This adaptability ensures that ILP services are perfectly tailored to your skill level, no matter where you are in your athletic journey. With ILP, you are in control. Choose the steps that matter most to you: diagnosis, treatment plan, recovery, or the whole journey. ILP services are tailored to your unique needs. Rushing for care is a common pitfall, leading to future problems. ILP Sports Consultants helps you make the right decisions, ensuring that you receive timely and safe care. And here's a bonus. Brian hosts the Injured List podcast, sharing insights and athlete stories you won't want to miss. Whether you're a concerned parent or grandparent, or an athlete yourself seeking guidance, ILP Sports Consultants is your beacon of hope in sports injury management. Visit ilpsports.com today. That's the letters ilpsports.com. ILP Sports Consultants, where your well-being is the priority and your recovery is the mission. Choose ILP Sports Consultants for a healthier sports journey, helping you get back in the game the smart way.
As we turn over the calendar into a new year, we have some great gridiron history coming up for the January 2nd football history headlines. And our feature story talks about the 1922 Rose Bowl game with a very interesting story. We have the details coming up in just a moment. PigskinDispatch.com is a proud affiliate of the Sports History Network, the headquarters of sports yesteryear. This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. This is your host, Darren Hayes, and we're broadcasting from the Pig Pen in Western Pennsylvania, bringing you the memories of the gridiron, one day at a time. So, with Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff supplying us with the tunes, let's go no huddle through today's football history headlines. Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, and welcome to the Pig Pen as we are going to discuss the January 2nd gridiron history on our football history headlines. And our first story is our feature story, and it's a very interesting one, and it happens from January 2nd, 1922, in Tournament Park, Pasadena, California. If you remember from yesterday's podcast, the Rose Bowl was played at Tournament Park until 1926, when the Rose Bowl itself was built, and in the stadium called the Rose Bowl, ended up using its name for the game, the Rose Bowl. But these games are considered the Rose Bowl. So the 8th Rose Bowl game, which was one actually at the Rose Bowl, had a small college from Pennsylvania, Washington and Jefferson, against the University of California. The washjeff.edu internet page shares an interesting tale from the game. The Golden Bears were the top team in the West Coast, and W&J were undefeated in 1921 and the best team on the east side of the nation. The Bears, though, were a heavy favorite. 14 points was the reported spread of the contest, as W&J, with a mere 450 students, was the smallest school ever to participate in a Rose Bowl game. It's an interesting billing right there. The best of the East versus the best of the West theme. But the story of the president's trek to Pasadena is where I want to dive into. During the undefeated season of W&J's football, their roster of 17 young men showed that only 11 of them participated on game days. Yes, it's hard for us to fathom in this era of the gridiron platooning and specialist system, but the presidents had just 11 fellas that stayed on the field and balled out every snap. The coach of this Great Western PA group was a legendary Greasy Neal, who is both a great player and a coach, not only on the gridiron, but on the baseball diamond too. From a football perspective, Greasy would go on to lead the Philadelphia Eagles teams as their head coach in the 1940s on the sidelines. The football budget for Washington Jefferson in 1920 was extremely tight. In fact, they only had enough dough to send 11 players to the Rose Bowl. The athletic administrator of the school himself reportedly had to mortgage his home to be able to attend the game. A major issue would occur on the team's cross-country travel. One of these 11 players on the trip, C.L. Spillers, it's reported, contracted pneumonia and had to be left in Kansas City. W&J now faced the great threat of not having enough players to field a full squad in the bowl game. Author E. Lee North's narrative titled Battling the Indians, Panthers, and Nittany Lions, the story of the Washington Jefferson College first century of football, 1890 to 1990, says that one of these reserve players, Bucky Buchanan, was stowed away on the train and that he was given Spiller's ticket when it was found that he could not continue on the journey. Another story from the December 28, 1921 New York Tribune states that the team wired home to have another reserve, Al Haddon, sent to take Spiller's place. The evidence of Buchanan being in the Pasadena team photos and not Haddon gives some credence to the stowaway story. Plus, it makes the whole thing a lot more legendary and nostalgic. Better story. Anyway, the Presidents made it to Pasadena and fielded 11 to play in what would be the final game at Tournament Park. W&J's quarterback Charles West gave the game another breakthrough moment as he became the first signal caller of African-American descent to play in the granddaddy of them all. The game was a defensive battle throughout. Cal's offense could muster only 49 yards on the ground and did not even complete one pass. The Presidents did not fare much better, as their 114 yards rushing was about it for the offensive stats. In the end, Washington Jefferson and Cal tied 0-0 in the only scoreless Rose Bowl game ever. W&J's captain, Russ Stein, was voted as the game's most outstanding player, and he went on to play in the NFL, was inducted in the Rose Bowl Hall of Fame in 1991. On the 2nd of January 1928, it was a close one in the 14th Rose Bowl when Stanford Cardinal outlasted the Pittsburgh Panthers by the score of 7-6. The 1956 edition of the Sugar Bowl, which was played on January 2nd that year, Pitt's Bobby Greer was the racial trailblazer as he became the first African-American player to break the color barrier in the segregated Deep South. January 2, 1956, the 22nd Orange Bowl was a battle of highly ranked teams. The contest as number one ranked Oklahoma Sooners got past the number three Maryland Terrapins 20-6. Now let's take a quick break from our headlines and let me remind you, you can learn more about gridiron history on our website, pigskindispatch.com. And you can contact me, Darren Hayes, at pigskindispatch@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Speaking of hearing from someone who's here, is one of my podcasting partners from the sportshistorynetwork.com that has a message just for you.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
January 2, 1961, at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, California, in a slight upset, the number 6 Washington Huskies knocked off the top-ranked team in the country, the Golden Gophers of Minnesota, 17-7. Now for some news from the professional level. January 2, 1965, the New York Jets signed future Pro Football Hall of Fame quarterback Joe Namath to a record contract in the professional football. It was sounds small by today's standards, but Namath and the Jets agreed to a $427,000 contract over 3 years. I think that's what veteran minimum is now for 1 year in the NFL. January 2, 1966, at Lambeau Field in Green Bay, the Cleveland Browns made their way to Wisconsin to battle the Packers in the final National Football League Championship game before the Super Bowl started a year later. This 1965 NFL Championship game was the first league title game broadcast in televised color. The teams exchanged passing TDs in the first quarter, according to the box score on the ProFootballReference.com website. The Browns could only muster two Lou Groza field goals the rest of the game, while the Pack added a Paul Hornung touchdown run and three Don Chandler three-pointers to steal the title. The Green Bay Packers defeated the Cleveland Browns 23-12 in this last championship game of the pre-Super Bowl era of pro football. January 2, 1972, at Miami's Orange Bowl, the 1971 AFC Championship game matched the Baltimore Colts up against the Miami Dolphins per the ProFootballReference.com website. The Dolphins showed the league a little of what was to come as they beat the Baltimore Colts 21-0 as Paul Warfield and Larry Zonka each scored offensive touchdowns for the Fins, while defender Dick Anderson added a 62-yard pick six for good measure. January 2, 1982. The epic in Miami. In the 85-degree Fahrenheit heat, the San Diego Chargers defeated the Miami Dolphins 41-38 in overtime in the AFC Divisional Playoff game, a game that set numerous playoff scoring records. January 2, 1983. In a 35-27 win over the Houston Oilers, Cincinnati Bengals quarterback Ken Anderson completed 20 consecutive passes and finished the season winning his second consecutive passing title with an NFL record of 70.55% completion percentage. That comes from the OnThisDay.com website. Now, here's some more threads that came from the OnThisDay.com website with some quick hitter scores. January 2nd, 1984, the 50th Orange Bowl, number 5 Miami of Florida, beats number 1 Nebraska 31-30. January 2nd, 1987, at the 16th Fiesta Bowl, number 2 Penn State beats number 1 Miami 14-10 in a thriller. January 2nd, 1989, the 18th Fiesta Bowl, number 1 Notre Dame defeats number 3 West Virginia 34-21 for the national title. January 2nd, 2012, a very exciting and high-scoring Fiesta Bowl was witnessed as the top 5 teams squared off with number 3 Oklahoma State matched up against number 4 Stanford, as covered by the ESPN.com article. Oak State signal caller Brandon Whedon threw for 390 yards and 3 touchdowns and matched his stats against Andrew Luck of the Cardinal, who tossed for 2 touchdowns and 347 yards himself. The contest lived up to its billing as the Cowboys prevailed in overtime over the Cardinal 41-38. All right, we have some great birthdays of Hall of Famers for this January 2nd, and we'll start off in the year 1912 in Canton, Illinois. Illinois Wesleyan's great tackle, Tony Blazine, arrived into the world. The NFF tells of how Tony was a 4-year letterman at his school, as they had a winning record in that era when they faced teams like Michigan State, DePaul, and Kentucky. Tony Blazine was accepted posthumously into the College Football Hall of Fame in 2002. Blazine played 8 seasons in the NFL with the Chicago Cardinals and the New York Giants. He then served as an assistant coach at the University of Illinois and the University of Washington. January 2, 1927, Smithers, West Virginia. The standout defensive end from the University of San Francisco, Gino Marchetti, was born. According to the Pro Football Hall of Fame site, Marchetti was the New York Yanks' number 2 pick in the 1950 NFL draft. The Yanks soon after that became the Dallas Texans for a season and then turned into the Baltimore Colts, and Marchetti went with them all the way through there. He was a feared defender as he went to 11 straight Pro Bowls and as an all-NFL selection in an unbelievable 9 different seasons in his 14-year NFL career. Gino was enshrined into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1972. January 2, 1930, Cumberland, Maryland. Bobby Williams, the fine quarterback from the University of Notre Dame, was born. Williams, as a 19-year-old, according to the NFF, quarterbacked the 1949 Notre Dame team to 10 straight victories with a 56% completion rate and the national championship title. Bobby's best performance of this magical 1949 season came against Michigan State when he had a 50-yard punt that went out of bounds at the 4. He ran 40 yards for a touchdown on a bootleg and went 13 of 16 on some timely passing. Bob Williams was voted into the College Football Hall of Fame by the Foundation of Football Voters in 1988. January 2, 1959, from Sacramento, California, Stanford running back Darren Nelson celebrates his day of birth. Darren was a trendsetter in college football as he became the first player in NCAA history to rush for more than 1,000 yards and catch more than 50 passes in one season, per the NFF's bio on him. Darren Nelson didn't do this one time, though. He would accomplish this feat three times during his standout career as a Cardinal. Nelson would finish his collegiate career as the NCAA leader for all-purpose yards, which remains a school record of 6,885. There was little doubt when the National Football Foundation selected Darren Nelson into the College Football Hall of Fame in 2014. January 2, 1964, Boston, Massachusetts. Plymouth State University's great halfback Joe Dudek arrived on the scene. Plymouth State may have only been a Division III school, but in 1985, Dudek gave them national attention, according to the footballfoundation.org website story, when Joe had his face, it was smack dab on the cover of the December 2, 1985 Sports Illustrated magazine. What an honor there. Joe's impact on college football was pretty big, as he received the highest vote ranking for a Division III player in Heisman history when he was ninth in 1985. Dudek, in his college career, earned the Division III All-America honor three times as he rushed and gained 5,570 career yards for an average of 7.1 yards per play and scored 79 touchdowns in his collegiate career. Joe Dudek made his grand entrance into the College Football Hall of Fame in the year 1997. We hope that you'll join us tomorrow for the football history headlines for January 3rd, where you may have think we skipped over it a little bit today, but we're going to go back into that 1987 Fiesta Bowl game with Penn State and Miami, getting a little bit more detail, because I believe it finished on January 3rd. We'll also talk about Tony Dorsett setting an NFL record. We'll talk about these and more in your football history headlines January 3rd, so make sure you subscribe. Join us at pigskindispatch.com. Go to your favorite podcast provider to find a podcast, or go to the sportshistorynetwork.com, where you'll find the Pigskin Dispatch podcast and many other great podcasts on sports history, just by going to that website, sportshistorynetwork.com, and clicking one of the great podcasts and great personalities we have on the network. Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. pigskindispatch.com. is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Each week, the official Football Learning Academy podcast will take you deep into the history of pro football through interviews with players, coaches, or administrators in the NFL, as well as interviews with Pro Football Hall of Fame selectors, authors, and historians. You'll learn how the game evolved and important moments that shaped the sport into what it is today. And don't miss the Pro Football History Nugget of the Week. Listen to the official Football Learning Academy podcast on the Sports History Network.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.